Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Britt Schramm. Hi, Britt.
Hey, Rob. How's it going?
Everything is just great. I'm happy to have you on. This is your first podcast, you told me?
This is correct. This would be my first podcast ever in the ether of the internet.
Oh, so. Boy. Like I said, I will try and be as gentle with you as possible. So I'm happy to have you here.
Just cuddle me like a nurse in the supply room.
All right. Fair enough. So again, this is exciting. We're here to talk about season 3, episode 23, White Gold, original air date March 11th, 1975, the penultimate episode of season 3. Before we get to the show, though, Britt, since you're new to MASHcast, I have to ask you, what's your origin story with MASH the series?
Well, it's strange. I can't remember a time when I never had MASH in my life. I mean, I am a kid of the 70s, so the only time I really picked up the show was in reruns, at least up until almost the end of the series. But I've caught a lot of it with the advent of the cable and the Super News Network, or the Super Networks that we had going on at that time. My dad was active duty in the military, so I, of course, that was always prevalent in my house, that we knew we would always have to move after a certain number of years. And one year, 1978, we actually moved up to Maine, which is the place in Maine was actually about an hour outside of where the inspiration for Crabapple Cove was.
Wow.
So I lived up there from 78 to 84. And of course, the next duty station that we were in got duty stationed to Japan. So and of course, with the new advent of technology, had a VCR. We taped the last episode of MASH and brought it with us because in overseas, at least in the early 80s, there was no satellite TV. We had a lot of rebroadcast material over in, as part of the Armed Forces Network. So I wore out that last episode of MASH because it not only had the episodes, the commercials in there as well, which was, you know, again, the more reminder of home. So I actually, and living in Japan, I got to go to Tokyo, mentioned very much in MASH, as well as Seoul. So I got really like a experience about, you know, at least with MASH. And I also think probably a side note that my mom had a crush on Alan Alda. So because I also know too much. I mean, I've seen the Four Seasons and Same Time Next Year. So I just have a feeling that it was just always in the background at some point.
I'm just saying, I like the idea of your mom, you know, acting like sort of being surreptitious about, oh, this just looks like a good movie. It's like, what seems to be the common denominator? Well, let's watch Sweet Liberty. Okay. All right.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. Some serendipity, exactly, as how it came up. And then in my later years in college, seeing it at night, they were rebroadcasting one channel in the DC area. I actually had the idea of doing front to back all of the episodes in a row. So every night for an hour, you'd get at least two episodes, and then the following night would be the same, the next two episodes. So it's almost like binging, but, you know, before the age of binging.
So you said your dad was in the service. Did he watch the show too?
Oh, yeah. Between being in the active duty Navy, he had two shows that were his go-to, MASH and All Creatures Great and Small.
What?
Which was an English series about a veterinarian during World War II. So, yeah, I know those two from my childhood. And it's just it's crazy how, again, you'd almost like take your work home from it. But I think that's something that he would always like to watch to unwind.
Now, did he when you would watch it together, did he say things like, oh, that's not the way it is? Or, you know, did he – I mean, you said he was in the Navy, so it's not the same branch of service. But did he have, like, observations about – oh, that's – they would never do that, or that person would never say that, or things like that?
Well, I mean, for my dad, it was always like a grain of salt. He always, you know, when we would watch it, he really would, I think, watch it just for the comedic values and not really hewn too close to the actual realness of it because, let's face it, especially in this episode, there's not a whole lot of realism being thrown around in MASH, even when they're the most serious. There's still a sense of, you know, looking at it from a different perspective that wasn't really all that serious. Because, again, a lot of that stuff, even if with Frank and his rules and regulations, there would still be stuff that you'd be going, well, that's even bad. You know, someone that was a hardline military person would not let that go. So and again, in the 80s, you would see a little bit more treating the military, at least from my perspective, more as a job versus a, you know, a call to service.
Gotcha.
I guess.
Gotcha.
So, although my dad was drafted out of Vietnam. So it was, there's also that as well.
I really have to ask, what was it like living in Japan? I mean, to be a teenager, that just sounds terrifying, but also, you know, like what an experience to have.
It was. Luckily, I was in my sophomore year in high school. And so at that point, you could ride the trains. There was a lot of freedoms that you probably wouldn't have, probably nowadays for sure. But back, you know, just being able to go a lot of places. I actually, you know, was a model at one point just because I had blonde hair and I was about 6 foot tall. So again, that kind of, and again, back in those days, it was not so much of a global, not economy, but just a global information exchange. So when I was in Japan, we had there was a lot of the Japanese that were still very fond of the 50s. So mm-hmm. you would go to a place that's a prefecture of Tokyo called Roppongi, and you would see a lot of the greasers and a lot of the 50s music, soccer, wow. whatever the case may be. So it was really like you would go back in time, and you're so disconnected from what was going on in the States, other than through either the Armed Forces radio network or, again, that's something that's brought up in MASH, Stars and Stripes. Mm-hmm. You would actually read Stars and Stripes while you're over there. I think every once in a while, maybe you would get a USA Today, but that was before their, you know, bull rush into the information age.
Wow. So imagine, like, you know, you can't really get into trouble because you'll be easy to spot and find if you did. And it was like, that 6 foot blonde kid, get that guy.
There's other things you could do because back then they were a little, you know, Japanese, they're a little more liberal with their self-policing. So if I could have gone to a vending machine and gotten alcohol. Beer.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, at least, you know, I think you could even get like hard alcohol out of a vending machine. And in most of the places there, you wouldn't get carded. So, yeah, you could get in trouble, but you just have to watch yourself. And there are other things going on as far as riding the trains. Being in the 80s, we were still somewhat removed from, we still had at least a generation that was still around from the end of World War II. So you did have some older Japanese people that didn't take kindly to Americans.
Okay. Well, that's fascinating. That really is interesting. I said, I can't, as someone who I've mentioned on other shows, as someone who's basically lived in the same like 2 hour radius in my entire life. This is fascinating to me that you got to travel all over the place. Like, I mean, going from Maine to Japan, I mean, wow, what a culture shock.
It was. And I really appreciate it. I actually graduated at high school there. So my high school was actually built out of an old munitions factory in Japan. which now has been torn down and been turned into something else. But when I lived there, it was an old munitions factory. And we had a high school from, I'd say we were grade 7 to 12. I think we maybe had like 300 people, if not maybe 350. Hmm. So it really was a small community. Everyone knew each other. So I still am friends with people from high school, and you know, we just went over our 33rd anniversary. Oh, I can't even remember anymore.
Wow, that's again, that's fascinating. That's really, I didn't know any of that stuff before we talked about doing this. That's really, really cool. I'm glad it's so funny what you mentioned about the commercials, where there's that weird window of time where if you rewatch a show that you watched, you know, X number of years ago, you don't want the commercials, right? Because they're just a nuisance. Like if Netflix had commercials in a show from like, say, Friends, you'd be like, that's annoying. But then the shows become so old that the commercials then become vintage. Then you want them again. You know what I mean? So it's like I you know, I wouldn't have wanted MASH is on Hulu. Like there was a point where I was like, oh, I wouldn't want commercials in there. And now I'm like, well, geez, if you guys inserted 70s era commercials from the actual shows, that'd be really cool. So I kind of wish I had some videotapes of MASH episodes with the commercials, because they're a time capsule of that moment in television.
Oh, yeah. And speaking as not part of my research, but as a fan of MASH, they actually have, as the 80s got bigger and, you know, MASH started going away, and after MASH was not picked up, You started seeing in the late 80s and into the 90s, the IBM brought back a part of the cast.
Yes, those
to
commercials.
Sell computers. Yeah. And it's so crazy to see like Alan Alda and, you know, Harry, you know, and Harry Morgan and, you know, everyone else pitch computers and do stuff like you're going, wow, this is like they, I never thought that they would go mine nostalgia to start selling computers from a place that had nothing to do with computers.
Right. Someday I'm going to have to do an episode of MASHcast about those commercials. Just do a quick review of them all. Because I loved those as a kid because they were MASH related. And the fact, and it was the bonus was that you got to see actors intermingle that you never saw on the show. Like, you know,
exactly.
You have like Larry Linville mixing in with like David Ogden Steers or something, or like Wayne Rogers mixing in with Harry Morgan. You're like, oh, yes. I never saw this on the show. So,
well, I mean, I'm not, I won't say, I'll say it now. If you do have one, I would like to at least be a tangent to that episode.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think it's going to have to do it, you know, what, 8 years from now, whenever I get to the end of the show. But
I'll still be here.
Stay healthy. Stay healthy.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, so. Yes.
We'll make that promise. So, all right. Well, that's awesome. That's a fantastic origin story. I love it. So, let's talk about the episode, which I mentioned is episode 23. White Gold is written by Larry Gelbart and Simon Muntner, directed by the always dependable High Averback. It's the middle of the night in the 477th, and everyone is involved in their own activities. Father Mulcahy is, of course, praying. Hawkeye and Trapper are with nurses, again, of course. And Frank and Margaret are spending the night together, again, of course. Outside, some thieves dressed in all black are sneaking into the supply shed. Klinger, on guard duty, overhears them, and the group splits up. The only one captured is Perkins, played by Hilly Hicks, who won't say much of anything as to why he and his friends were stealing medical supplies. Next day, Colonel Flagg arrives in camp on the case of a string of similar robberies. He demands that Hawkeye and Trapper turn the patient over to him, but they flatly refuse. He then offers to try and get information from Perkins, but Hawkeye and Trapper try and stop him, saying they prefer to get their info without the use of torture. Flagg goes ahead anyway and visits Perkins. But instead of torturing the man, he orders him to take a powder, which he does. Flagg then fakes a fight, smashing up the tent using his feet, fists, and head. Hawkeye and Trapper patch Flagg up, but they don't believe his story that Perkins was the one that caused all the damage. Later that night, they discover another attempt at someone stealing penicillin. This time, it's Colonel Flagg. Flagg then says he can use the penicillin to barter with his contacts to get information about the enemy's movements. That same night, an MP arrests Perkins, and he tells them that he's actually named Johnson, and he works at an aid station where the penicillin is scarce, if not impossible, to find. He's sorry for stealing, and Henry says he could just ask next time. To keep Johnson safe from Flagg hunting him down, Hawkeye and Trapper come up with a way of sidelining Flagg for a few days. They put some pills in his coffee, which makes Flagg get appendicitis, requiring surgery. The episode ends with Flagg recuperating in post-op, who is sure that Hawkeye and Trapper have pulled one over on him. All right, Britt. So I wonder if you agree with me, my assessment, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but this is certainly one of the goofiest episodes MASH did, certainly in season three, maybe not compared to season one. But as the show is getting more and more kind of realistic and a little grim in places, and especially knowing what's coming in the very next episode, this is a very silly – it's very funny, but it's a very silly episode.
Yeah, I look at this one as like, well, first you have Flagg, who's already going to bring a physical comedy nature to it.
The great Edward Winter.
Yes. I don't know if you can be typecasted for a guest spot on a certain show, but it seems like this is the only role he's really known for. I mean, he's done a lot of work, but this one, anytime you'd see a picture of him, anyone would recognize him as being Colonel Flagg.
Yep.
So, and it's weird for a character that maybe had, what, 5 episodes, if that? To be that brand recognized for just that one role. And I always liked, you know, Colonel Flagg just because he reminds me of a Carlin joke where he used to say, you were talking about Jumbo the Shrimp and saying, I mean, it's like military intelligence. Mm-hmm. The words don't go together. So it's always, you know, you always see that and kind of laugh at it. And I also think this is a very low stakes episode. I mean, it's a single threaded plot, no B plot, no C. No, it's just the one straight ahead thing that they have going forward. So, and it's, to me, it's just one of those things that it's like, it's reminding you what the show used to be before they make the change. Mm-hmm. Because you hear a lot of incidental music underneath it, in between scenes, even during scenes, where you don't hear that as much anymore. I mean, the laugh track is still relatively prevalent even going into season 4, but for this one, it's very much more pronounced. So you're right. It is very goofy. It's very much a, I wouldn't say a time capsule of what MASH used to be before it goes into the more serious roles, issues as far as what's going on with people in the war and how long they've been there.
Yeah, the there's a music cue in this episode, and we'll get to the scene shortly, that is so goofy that I think the first time I ever saw White Gold, I was like, what? Like, what? What is this? What are they doing? And we'll, it's a scene with Colonel Flagg, and we'll get to it as the episode rolls on. And like I said, it opens up with the three thieves. I mentioned one of them is played by Haley Hicks. He would return to MASH playing a different character in the season 5 episode Post-Op. He played Robbie Robertson in the Spider-Man TV pilot. And he was a regular on the show Rollout, which was a not a MASH spinoff, but a sort of MASH-adjacent show because it was about an African-American army unit, and it was produced by Gene Reynolds, which it didn't run, didn't last very long. There are episodes on YouTube I probably need to check out to maybe do like a, again, another special episode of MASHcast, because it's a show that has been forgotten by time, but it, you could see that they were like, well, this is, you know, MASH is popular, so let's try out this show. So he was a regular on that show. He has retired from acting. He is now a clergyman. So that's got to be interesting that, you know, there's some church every Sunday. See this guy. And like, oh, that was that guy on MASH. And then the other two actors who really don't get much in the way of lines playing the thieves, there's Daniel Torp. Strange name. He plays a character named Morris. He was in shows like Hunter, Knight Rider, Wonder Woman, T.J. Hooker. And then there's Michael Salcido, who plays Rodriguez. He was on a show called David Cassidy, Man Undercover, which is one of the great titles of TV shows of all time. The $6 Million Man and Police Story. But they basically, they get away. And it's Hilly Hicks is the one, Perkins is the one that gets captured. And then, of course, he said, we bring in Colonel Flagg here. And again, you mentioned Edward Winter, and really one of the great comedic performances of all time with that wonderful squint that he had. Mm-hmm. And just the way he kind of talks a little, like everything's kind of broken up with the, you know, it's like, it's just very weird. He's so in love with his own toughness, and everyone else, even outside of, Burns, who obviously worships him, and Margaret, who finds him very attractive, everyone recognizes that he's just a clown. He's just a giant clown. And so, you know, I always love ending the episodes with Colonel Flagg. And of course, the whole end scene where they put the pill in Flagg's coffee, which causes him to get appendicitis, and they have to give him basically the fake operation. That would end up being the basis for a later episode, season 7, Preventative Medicine, where Hawkeye does that to a colonel and BJ objects to it. So it's sort of funny that you have this same plot line treated two completely different ways, because here it's all a gag. It's in fact, Henry is completely on board with doing this
implicitly. Flag. He tells him, hey, why don't you go do this?
And yeah.
Doesn't give him the directions, but yeah, definitely gave his blessing for it.
Right. And so you couldn't see a bigger difference of how the show would change in that, you know, in season 3, it was considered a gag. And in season 7, it was like, no, this was a big fight between the two of the main characters, something we never saw before. So
because it goes against the Hippocratic Oath.
Yeah.
He's taking out a healthy organ.
Yeah.
To do something else. So, and to speak of season 7 Preventative Medicine, do you know who the colonel? I did a deep dive. So the colonel who that you're speaking of that actually had the same type of operation. Do you know who he was played?
No, not off the top of my head.
A star of some of our panelists' favorite forgotten TV show Beyond Westworld, James Wainwright.
Oh, he was on that show? Oh, God, okay.
Yes. Yeah, he was actually one of the three leads.
Wow, okay. Well, good for him.
And then going back to Hilly Hicks, I would be remiss if not saying this, being a 70s kid, as I said before, he was also a camp counselor on Filmation's Shazam.
That when I was doing this research. Oh, I feel
co-starring
awesome.
with the future Rorschach, Jackie Earle Haley.
Whoa.
Again, if I do a deep dive, I go really deep. So, yeah, that's when I saw him. And the first time I was going, I know where that's from. And, of course, I own it's DVDs, but the reissues of the Shazam series because I'm a big Filmation fan. So, yeah, it's one of those ones that it just burns in your mind because he's a good actor. You could tell the way he presents himself, the way it's definitely – when you said clergy, it doesn't surprise me that he went on to something similar of that nature, just because of, I think every character he had some form of very moral fortitude.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's true.
Obviously, you need for it.
Yeah, he's good. He's good in both episodes of MASH that he appeared in. After he said after they capture Corporal Perkins. Excuse me, I think it's Star Wars. after they capture Lieutenant Perkins, and there's the whole bit of where you know after Klinger has apprehended him, which is good. Good on Klinger. Klinger's actually Frosty in the clutch. He uses his MIG stole to grab Perkins by the throat, which is pretty good. He's a good sentry.
Was it laundered after he got the succotash on?
Yeah, that's presumably, yes. Presumably, Hawkeye did say, "I'll have your skunk clean." So, I'm sure that he followed up. He was good to his word. I love that Burns comes out with the gun long after the violence has been settled. Like, he's got to come out with his big rifle. And they even kind of do the faux, Hi Averback does sort of the faux tough guy shot where he puts the camera way down on the ground. So Burns comes out and he's looming like he's John Wayne or something. And obviously he thinks he's, you know, he's like a big, big tough guy. And you're like, yeah, well, you're tough because you're carrying a gun around, Burns, you knucklehead. And then the next scene, there's this moment with Hawkeye and Trapper where they are trying to interrogate Perkins. And, you know, he won't say anything. And then there's this funny little moment where it feels almost like an ad lib where Perkins has got his ribs, presumably either, you know, bruised or broken. And so they're putting him in these bandages. And Hawkeye is pulling the bandages off these rolls and snipping them and handing them over to Trapper, who is applying them to Perkins's midsection. And there's this bit where I swear it seems like an ad lib where Trapper says, "Hey, cut these longer." And Hawkeye says, "They're supposed to be this short." And you just hear Trapper go, "No, they're not." And he just sort of says it under his breath. And it's like, if that is written, boy, they really did a great job. Because it really feels like an ad lib between these two characters.
It does. And it, like you said, he almost says it under his breath. Yeah. Like, passive aggressive. Like, "No, they're not." And I thought the same thing, too. Because it really didn't flow with the conversation they were having about interrogating Perkins. It was like, to me, he already looked over taped up anyway. So it seemed like he should have been done as it is. So it just seemed like a throwaway stuff. So it sounded very ad libbish.
Yeah. I had read on the show that Larry Gelbart said there were no ad libs on MASH, that everything was written. that just means you're really giving a really great performance if you can make it sound like an ad, because as I said, especially Wayne Rogers is a little, "No, they're not." Again, he just the way he mutters it really is like, wow, okay, that's, and I like that there's a little bit of discrepancy between the two doctors about how to do this. And I'd love to find out, for all you doctors out there listening, should they be that long? Should they be short? How does that work? I don't know. I don't know how this works. So then the next scene is in Henry's office where Colonel Flagg arrives. And I love that his whole disguise is a pair of glasses. He's doing the Superman thing. Where it's
very Supermanish, yes.
That's great.
And if they could have changed Goldberg to, say, Schuster or whatever. Again, it would have been more on the nose than just using the glasses.
I'm Corporal Kent.
Yes.
I love that it's supposedly, you know, that Henry doesn't recognize him initially. Like, he's like, "Oh, yeah, it's you, Colonel Flagg." And then there's this real sinister moment where Henry kind of refuses to go along with what Flagg wants, which is handing over Perkins. And Flagg says, "Don't cross us, Colonel. We know where your family lives." Which is like, what the hell is that?
It definitely a change in tone very quickly. But it happens again also later in the episode, but we can get to that.
Yeah.
But there's sometimes a little bit of, like you said, malice underneath it, to where you have to still take him at his word that he is that, I wouldn't say insane, but that committed to getting what he wants.
Yeah, he's really, really out there, Flagg. And so then later on, he goes into the swamp, and Hawkeye and Trapper just absolutely goof on him throughout the whole time. In fact, my favorite line from this episode is from this scene, and we'll get to it later on. And then Flagg goes to the VIP tent where Perkins is basically under arrest. We see Burns smoking a pipe, which we've never seen before. I thought that was unusual.
I was going to speak that to the – it looks – I mean, again, doing a deep dive. It looks like it's the same pipe that Rizzo used in a poker scene in two episodes prior. So I'm thinking they're just reusing props that they have there, and plus to allow him to make that noise. To me, it didn't seem like much, but I guess just to wake him up before Flagg got in there. I do want to go back to the scene with Henry in his office with Flagg. When Flagg says something, says, you know, we don't joke in the CIA. There was a radar did like a real eye roll that to me, I wouldn't think that was a part of his character. To me, it seemed very, you know, again, he's not, he's the negative person there. So he's not, he, you know, obviously scared of all authority. So, I mean, to me, for him to roll his eyes, I mean, and it was a very odd eye roll anyways, but to have him in that moment, it seemed weird. It seemed very out of character for him.
Hmm, interesting. I didn't even notice that. I'll have to go back and watch that one. But yeah, Radar is, I mean, Radar is scared of Flag, obviously, because Flag is intimidating. But at the same time, Radar is smart enough to know that Flag, like I said, is a complete clown. He's just an idiot, you know, and whatever. So again, back to the scene in the VIP tent. This becomes... first of all, Frank has a great line. Let me know if there's anyone I can tell on, which is a great, great Frank line. The sniveling little shit that he is. And this is the scene where he said with Perkins, where he says, "Take a powder, beat it." And of course, Perkins. There's this really nice series of close-ups, which is a little more has a little more tension than you typically see on MASH at this point, where Perkins is kind of looking at him like, "What?" You know, and then he thinks, of course, he's being set up. And then Flag even says, "Don't worry, you're not going to take one in the back. You can frisk me." And he does. And he tells him to get the hell out of there. And then that's when Flag has to fake the fight that Perkins, you know, put up a fight. And there was this big pitched battle. And this is where the goofiness comes in, because we see Flag as he's upending the mattress and he knocks over some crap on a desk. And he's just basically smashing the tent to make it look like there was a fight. And there's this moment where he decides he is going to run headfirst into this bureau or like a wardrobe. And you hear this music underneath it where it's like, wah, 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 wah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when did MASH ever score things like that? Like, even when I was the first time, like I said, I ever saw this episode, I was like, what show is this? What's happening?
Yeah, it definitely was very odd. And they do it again at the end. And again, they always used to do it like up to the beginning of the scene at the start of the show. And at the end, they always do an end wrap up type incidental music. But yeah, this was the first time it was like, again, very prevalent. It is, like you said, it's not something you normally would expect. So it just gets either they're trying because there's no talking. They didn't want a dry scene with him just trying to smash himself. So they're trying to maybe compensate for someone putting self-harm with the music underneath it. Yeah, it definitely sounded or felt weird to hear it.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, obviously I don't have the numbers in front of me because I'm not quite that obsessive just yet, but I am betting, my hunch would be, if you start counting the moments between when Flag walks in, from the moment that Burns walks out of the tent to the end of this scene, this is probably the longest any MASH episode has gone without a main character in the scene.
Yeah.
Because this scene goes on for a while. I mean, they really – this is like a full two-minute sequence of Flag walking around. He actually takes the phone receiver and smashes it over his head, which looks massively painful. And then he hits into the wardrobe like that. But, I mean, again, the music score is so strange. And, again, not to – when you think about where the placement of this show was, that it is the penultimate episode of season three – and they knew at this point what a gut punch they were preparing for the season for now to change it up so heavily is I would say gutsy, I guess, in some ways, because just like this is really almost like Mad Magazine time for this show. And I mean, again, I think it's Colonel Flag sort of brings that out in the show because he's such a silly character.
I mean, it's a smart move because you're kind of softening people up before you really drop them off a cliff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so yeah, they're looking at, I mean, again, at the time, you know, even in hindsight, you're looking at, okay, this is the one where we'll play it safe, I guess, and just make people think, oh, okay, this is just a one-off. We're just kind of doing some jokes. And then you go right into the next episode and they kind of start, I mean, I won't go into the next episode, but they still kind of start that way. And then all of a sudden, boom, they just drop you off the cliff. And then you're like going, what the heck? And so, yeah, it is definitely one of those ones where it's almost – and it's an outlier. It really is. Mm-hmm. So
following that, then the Hawkeye and Trapper are bandaging Flag up, and he talks about that it was a fight, and they don't buy it for one second. It leads to one of my favorite – not like totally my favorite, one of my favorite gags is where after they're kind of abusing Flag, he storms off and he says, "I've been recording every word you two have saying." And Trapper goes, "You don't want to know where he hid the microphone," which is Great. That line.
Classic.
Classic. And then we're with Frank and Margaret, where once again, Frank's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. Frank is worried that Margaret finds Flag very attractive, and we know that she does. She finds Flag very sexy, and I kind of enjoy the way Margaret tortures Frank a little. Like, she could really let him off the hook and say, don't worry, Frank. But she doesn't. She kind of plays coy a little bit. And I also noticed during this whole sequence, and this is a runner throughout the show with Margaret, when Margaret is in a, let's say, heightened sexual state, she's combing her hair. That is always something that she's doing when she's getting excited, that she's combing hair. And that seems to be something they love to give Loretta Swit to do, that when she's talking about something that is sexually enticing to her, she's forcefully combing her hair.
Yeah, that's I didn't pick up on that one. I'll have to look at it at that lens that next time I watch another episode.
There's the scene in The Consultant from earlier in the season where Frank is going on about what Hawkeye and Trapper are going to do in Tokyo. And he's like, they're going to go to these bars where these girls and their bars and their bar stools. And Margaret is like, what are they going to do, Frank? And she's practically ripping hair out of her head. She's combing it so hard. So, and then, so after that, there's another attempt at stolen supplies. And at this time they see that it's Flag. And later on we follow up, we see that Hawkeye got socked in the jaw accidentally by Trapper, and he even says, nice right cross, Frank. Nice right cross, Trapper. Again, that would hurt pretty bad. You know, I imagine if you got socked and socked in the head. And then Margaret shows up, of course, to help bandage Colonel Flag, and part of that, for in her mind, requires her to rub her hands all over his ribcage.
Nothing predatory at all about that.
No, not at all. So following that is a really great scene, which was always cut in syndication. I didn't see it until I got the DVDs, where there is a debate between Henry and Frank, where Frank is essentially pro-torture. He is saying it's okay if we have to do it. And Henry is horrified. Henry's like, we're a hospital. We don't do things like that. And I really love the scene. And he even says Flag's head is so twisted he has to screw his cap on. When I first saw the scene on the DVDs, I bought this Martini and Medicine box set in the mid-2000s. And that was during the debate we were having. I hate to even use the word debate, as if to me there's two sides of this thing. But there was the debate going on about, do we as America torture? And we were, you know, do we torture Al-Qaeda suspects? Do we torture? And to see that debate happening in a 1974 episode of MASH was pretty startling.
Yeah. It's sad that it was cut, because both Larry Linville and McLean Stevenson really bring a lot to that. Again, you look at it and you go, why couldn't some of this stuff happen a little bit more frequently? And especially, you know, you hear him say he's a psycho, and it's really, you know, hammering home the fact that, well, yes, this is a comedy, and yes, he's played for laughs. He is someone that you don't want to get on the wrong side of. I mean, he even mentions, you know, his list of people that are, you know, are yellow, are what, red, which are unsympathetic, and then yellow, which means you need to work on it. So, I mean, this guy is really, he really has a certain perspective that no one else on the camp has. And I think he does bring that type of really true, you know, he really brings that type of malice, as we said before, to the proceedings as far as MASH goes.
It's always very instructive to me too about like what gets cut and what doesn't, and that like whoever was the local syndicator cutting the episode, they left in the goofy scene with Frank and Margaret talking about Colonel Flag being sexy, and they took out this scene. You know, and to me, it's like, well, this scene is much more informative to the thread of the episode than just that kind of silly Frank and Hot Lips moment. But of course, you know, that's the people, the syndicators, probably like, well, this is a comedy. Let's leave the comedy in and cut out all this other stuff.
And see, I would have thought that the actual setup for the beginning of the episode, where the people, they're corpsmen from another company, come in and are doing their sneaking in to get to the cabin of the supply. The shed to get the stuff. All that stuff with this, the overhearing of the conversations in each tent, it's really superfluous. It isn't needed. You could actually just start the episode from seeing them come out of the woods and go right to the shed to start getting it. You really don't need it. It doesn't add anything to the show.
I wonder if they had to leave that in because the credits were over it, like the writer credits, the director credits, and they couldn't cut that because the credits have to show.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
So, but yeah, it's weird to me how these things get cut. And like I said, my head really snapped back a little when I first saw the scene. I was like, oh, this is great. I love that Henry is holding the line here. He's like, no, Frank, this is wrong, and that's it. And then later, Perkins is arrested, and he's brought in by an MP. And the MP is played by an actor that all of us nerds are familiar with. He is played by Stafford Rep. And, of course, Stafford Rep was, oh, begorla, Chief O'Hara on the Batman TV series. As a kid, I will say I loved it when my favorite shows crossed over like this, if accidentally. I was so excited to see Chief O'Hara on a MASH episode. This is Stafford Rep's final credit. And, in fact, he passed away 4 months before this episode even came out. So this is the last thing he ever did. Now, it is not, in terms of the timeline, it is not his final credit, in fact, because he has a brief appearance, and yet another thing I love, he has a brief appearance in Orson Welles' final film as director, The Other Side of the Wind, which, of course, Netflix finally finished and released last year. So that actually, if you go to IMDb, that's actually his last credit. So you'll see Stafford Rep's credits stop in 1974, and then they pick up again in 2019. But that's just a technical note. Basically, this was the last thing he ever did as an actor. And, you know, I always wonder about the stuff that it's – when you're a series regular like that, and Stafford Rep was in all 120 episodes of Batman, I wonder what it's like to just kind of go back to being like a jobbing actor and have little parts like this where, you know, I mean, I don't know, maybe you're happy, you're just happy that you're working, but it always feels like a little like, oh, man, you were like a series regular, and now you're just kind of like a guy that gets two scenes in a MASH and you're out.
Yeah, and I don't know what the syndication deal was that he got, because again, we saw Batman in reruns, and it was shown everywhere. So he must have gotten a lot of residual from being on Batman, as you said, a series regular, being on everyone.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't look at all of his IMDb credits, but still, you'd think that's, you know, having something like that. He, again, going to typecasting, maybe getting something else. Even in this role, you don't see him as Chief O'Hara. He's aged up a little bit more, but still, it's like he may have had problems, and maybe he, like you said, maybe it was time for him just to retire. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, and he doesn't have the accent, of course. He's just playing like a different kind of character. So, but yeah, as a kid, I was like, oh, look, it's Chief O'Hara in a MASH episode. It's very exciting. So now they have to give Perkins a chance to escape, and you know, again, this hits on a theme of the show that they've gone back to here and there about the scarcity of supplies, and that, of course, the medics on the front line really need penicillin, or they need morphine, or they need all these different things, and they're resorting to having to steal from a MASH unit, which, of course, is sort of robbing Peter to pay Paul. And of course, Flag has an argument that the reason I need it is to trade it with my contacts, and if I do that, I'll stop a battle long before it ever happens, and I'll save more lives than you ever will. And it's sort of funny because it's like, I don't buy that Flag even wants to stop battles. I think Flag is perfectly happy to have more fights because he's that kind of guy. But that's his justification for why he is stealing the supplies.
And then you also have the other side, which again is more of the Frank's responsible. Well, we have nothing to inventory.
Yeah, then we'll have nothing to inventory.
So yeah, you see all the different sides of the same issue. Yeah. But you're right. I think Flag would want to perpetuate it. And again, just because you can get it does not mean you can prevent anything. It's just a guess on his part. Yeah. So
and then it said Henry suggests, well, we have to find a way to get Colonel Flag out of action. And we see Hawkeye give as Trapper distracts him, talks about don't eat the bacon. You'll be in the latrine for 2 weeks. We see Hawkeye put something in Flag's coffee. And again, another question to the doctor, to the medical professionals out there. What pill is that? Is there a pill that doctors have that can give you appendicitis? I'm not familiar with what that might be. That seems like a pretty dangerous pill.
And it has to be fast dissolving because he barely mixes it. And
yeah, right, yeah.
They weren't like Alka-Seltzer tabs. They were real capsules. So yeah. I'm not sure how that could have dissolved in the quick of time without him catching on.
Yeah, yeah. And then another curious syndication edit in the version that I always grew up with. The show literally ends with Trapper saying 2 weeks. That's the end of the show. That's it.
Wow.
So there's no appearance by Igor where Igor notices what's Hawkeye doing. There's no moment there. And there's no final scene. And so for viewers, you have to just kind of like piece it together yourself that that's what they're going to do to Flag. They never explicitly say we're going to give him an operation to keep him off the line. We just have to. And so when I was a kid, I was like, all right, I guess they're slipping him some sort of Mickey. I don't know. But the episode literally ends with 2 weeks and then it's credits. So I'm like, wow, you had to really put this one together for yourself.
Wow, and that's a lot of – I mean, because you miss out the whole ER or
yeah,
OR.
Yeah.
You miss that whole scene and the really the ender, which, you know, I found where I actually had my favorite joke at the end, which that's terrible. But
yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know why this episode – I mean, why this episode seemed to be so much more – cut up than some of the other ones, but I don't know. But instead, it ends with you got Flag kind of knowing he's been tricked, and Hawkeye and Trapper play dumb or just kind of like, all right, yeah, whatever. What are you talking about? And then there is a button scene in post-op where they go and they Hawkeye and Trapper say, oh, they ask him how was the coffee, and Flag knows that he's been hoodwinked. He knows it. He can't prove it. But he knows it, and that's pretty much the – and then it ends with them having to give him a shot at the end, and that's basically the end of the episode. So like I said, overall, it's a very, very funny show, and again, it would underscore how different MASH would become in just a couple of seasons, that this plot line is sort of like a throwaway here would become the spine of another whole episode down the line. But overall, it's a very, very funny show.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure Flag has been drugged before.
That's
probably why he's used to it. He's probably used to it by now.
Probably.
But yeah, this is really, again, something that they're setting you up, and as soon as you get comfortable, they're going to take the rug out from under you.
They sure are. So what is your favorite line or joke from this episode?
Well, I have a favorite joke, a favorite quip, and then a bad one.
All right, go right ahead.
Go in it. Okay, I'll go with the bad one, is during when they were taping up Johnson / Perkins, and they make a joke about trying to trade Margaret,
right?
Hot Lips, and then but they said that they can't sell her because she has too many miles on her. not a good one. Not a good line. Not good. Not at least now the lens of 2020. And then when Hawkeye and Trapper are in the swamp with Flag and Flag's trying to get their signatures, there was one quip by Hawkeye saying it's your gun holier than now attitude. And I just thought that was kind of a good zinger. And the last one was actually on the button scene. It was when Frank was saying Margaret checking up on Flag after post-op. And he pulls her to talk to her and he says it was a simple appendectomy. If your breath got any hotter, you'll singe his chest. I thought, again, hilarious to show that Margaret was, you know, again, as we've seen the male staff be very predatory towards the nurses. Well, this was actually equal opportunity for the women to do the same. So.
when it comes to Margaret lusting over another guy, that really pushes Frank's buttons. And he mentioned in a previous episode about, if you're practically drooling in your bra. Like he's willing to say things he wouldn't normally say when he's pushed to – when his back is against the wall where he feels like Margaret is making moony eyes at somebody else. So I love that's something that Frank will go outside his comfort zone when he's – when he's threatened. So yeah, that's all. That is a great line. My favorite
is yours. Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite is when Colonel Flag goes to the swamp and he starts trying to push Hawkeye and Trapper around. Of course they're not having it. And he says, I have official authority to do anything to crack this case and I can die in the line of duty if necessary. And I love that Trapper just goes, hey, that's the spirit. And then Hawkeye buttons it with, yeah, if we had more men like you, we'd have less men like you. It's just
yes, again, very good banter between the three of them, really. So it really kind of encapsulate how they view Flag and how Flag views them. Flag sees them as a means to the end, and they look at Flag as some joke.
Yeah, to me, I'm like, if you're a comedy writer and you write that line, you're like, I'm going to lunch now. I did my bit. Yeah, we'll come back to this later because that's a great line. And just, of course, the way Alan Alda delivers it with that Groucho-esque, yeah, if we had more men like you, we'd have less men like you. That's just, chef's kiss. It's just fantastic.
Yes.
So, Yeah, so overall, I said it's a really funny show. It is a very goofy show, but MASH was malleable like that. They were able to do that. Matt Groening refers to, I think it's called the rubber band reality on The Simpsons, where you can do a joke that obviously makes no literal sense, like, you know, the parking lot of the nuclear plant extends all the way to the Homer's backyard, and it's never referred to again. They had that freedom. MASH obviously wasn't able to go that far, but nevertheless, as we've been talking about, we know what's coming up in the next episode, and yet here's a very silly episode. It's got a serious point underneath it, especially the stuff about the torturing, but yeah, it's overall a silly episode. Any episode with Colonel Flagg is inherently going to be silly, and we know what's coming seven days later. So overall, it's a great episode, and it's unique in that it's tonally just very, very strange. And so overall, it's a great show.
Yeah. It kind of highlights their strengths and also the change in the direction that they, like, again, it's more foreshadowing than anything else.
Yep. So I said, that's going to do it for White Gold. So Britt, thank you so much for doing this, man. It was great talking to you.
Yes. I really appreciate you having me on, and I hope to come back in the future.
Absolutely. I hope your first podcast experience was a pleasant one.
It was. You're very gentle.
Thank you very much. So, of course, everybody, if you want to follow the show, you can go to our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. And finally, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, and Dolph DeVries for their support of MASHcast. So that's going to do it, everybody. Next week is the final episode of Season 3. We'll be doing some special shows after that and a mailbag show. But in terms of the regular episodes of MASHcast, next week is going to be the final one. So, and of course, we all know what's coming. So, gird your loins, everybody. We're going to be doing it. So, anyway, again, thanks everybody for listening. And until next week, that is all.
Novocaine syringe.
Hey!
No drugs.
A little Novocaine in your head. You'll never know the difference.
Negative. If I lose control, you guys don't have the clearance to hear what's in my head.
I haven't got the stomach for it.